Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And coming up on Unspun, we have, oh, God, George, we have so much to talk about. It is that silly season, and it's about to get ugly on a number of fronts, campaign-wise.
It's going to get crazy. Let's get to it.
Let's go. Done.
All right. So, I mean, I don't even know where to start.
I do.
Okay.
I do. Because I actually moderated a leadership election edition, if you will, debate for BC care providers this week. So seniors care being on the forefront, on the front burner, especially in BC, where our demographic does skew older because we're the Hawaii of Canada. Very interesting to have the NDP's Adrian Dix. I erroneously called him Minister Dix off the hop, but of course the writ has dropped, so he's not anymore. Sorry. I'm so not politically savvy when it comes to these things. Eleanor Sturco, rather controversial candidate for the BC Conservatives. Some would say the star candidate for the BC Conservatives, in that she has practiced and certainly knows how to talk in front of a crowd, having been the lead media liaison for the RCMP in BC for a while, former police officer, as well as we had independent now, Corinne Kirkpatrick, who was formerly BC United for Capilano. What's the riding? West Van Capilano, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And so she's standing as an independent. Interesting to have somebody who doesn't have a party taking part in a debate. And Pat McCutcheon, who is actually up against Eleanor Sturco. He is a businessman who has just taken up the staff and decided, I'm going to get into politics, which is interesting to have somebody like that taking part in a debate. Really interesting stuff came out in it, of course. It was sort of a slow walk into it, but then when the fighting started to come out, they definitely had their prepared, and when I mean they, mostly Adrian Dix and Eleanor Sturco, were ready to go mano a mano, I guess, BC Conservatives versus the NDP. And certainly, George, what was on the front burner of that was John Rustad, the Conservative leader's, history of being anti-vaccine, saying that he's had them, but he wouldn't. He regrets having vaccines for COVID-19. And then his want to fire Provincial Health Officer Dr. Bonnie Henry and something about eating bugs.
Kids will be eating bugs because of the environment, because of our strict regulations on the environment. So, you know, none of this, none of that's a surprise in some ways. What we're seeing, though, certainly on the now that the writ's dropped, is it's getting ugly. And NDP have been holding on to a lot of stuff, not only about Rustad, but about the Conservatives in general, the candidates. So I'm sure they have a strategy over the next 4 weeks to kind of release strategically pieces of content. And as it gets closer and closer, and depending on what the way, you know, what the issues are that they really want to focus on, and they'll release, you know, audio tapes, video, whatever they got. Documents, you know, it goes on and on, and it's there. This is will be definitely an ugly Conservatives. They don't have the systems in place to build that kind of campaign. They really don't. They don't have any money, barely any, to even run ads. And all the ads are already bought by the NDP. Every single you've noticed on TV is mostly NDP ads, right? Because you watch TV. You know, if you're not listening to our podcast and watching our podcast. Which, of course, you are right now.
Of course you are. Because you're savvy, you know, like that.
They have gobbled up all the media, traditional media that exists in BC. You know, and if you believe advertising works right now, that does them very well because they can do whatever they want with it. They've got the slots booked. Conservatives can't book it. It's booked. They even if they had the money, they couldn't get it.
So I want to do a little bit, because we are unspun, we want to take the spin out of some of the things we're talking about. I just gave you those nuggets that have been drip, drip, drip put out there, obviously, by the NDP to, you know, point at the Conservatives and say, are you aware of this, that this is a thing? So, you know, beyond not being able to get the political airtime, you touched on it there. I don't know that everybody understands that when you talk about having the campaign dollars, having that war chest, it's not just about buying advertising and just about you know, creating the content for the, you know, the TV ad, whatever. But if you were the Conservative Party and you made your entire ad campaign that you've been working on, because it takes weeks and weeks, if not months, to create, you know, content to put on TV or online and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all rooted around Axe the Carbon Tax. And then all of a sudden, David Eby goes, you know what, we might actually get rid of that carbon tax. You know what? It's like, oh my God. Right?
Take that away
from him. The spin on that is like, we don't have money to do a new ad. And now what does the ad look like? And it's toothless. And
yeah,
it's really strategic though, right? George, people don't, people like, oh, what a happy accident.
Yeah, as much as you might call Eby a flip-flopper, this is all math. And so he said, I'll take the pain, the short-term pain for the long-term gain of winning the election. And they have, yeah, you're right. They have no way, NDP have no lever, no ability to get their message out except through PR, you know, basically getting journalists to cover the story. Or
you said NDP, you meant to say conservatives.
Conservative. So yeah.
Yeah.
And so the goal here, and we talk about this a lot, is in Vancouver or British Columbia, doesn't matter, certainly pretty much Canada, and even in the States actually right now, that mushy middle, that centrists. And if where are they, those undecided, whatever you want to call them, they float around the middle and they you never know where they're going to land.
Right.
And usually, you know, they would, you know, they felt comfortable with the BC Liberals, partly, I think, just logically with the name. BC United changed.
Some definitely did.
It's more conservative, but clearly not conservative for John Rustad. Now there's no BC United, there's no center party. So we have a situation where all the NDP is going to try and do is get those votes. They're solid. No NDP is going to go vote conservative at all. They're not going to lose their base. Zero base will be lost.
Right.
So it's ridings in Surrey, a couple in Vancouver, you know, some in the Valley, but mostly it's Surrey and a couple in Vancouver, like about 10 or 12 seats that they will be fighting for. And, you know, I even know the machine, the Conservatives have their machine, but it's not the same machine the BC United had. And some of the people, that senior level people that were in the BC United central campaign team, are now, they weren't invited, as far as I know, into the central campaign team of the BC Conservatives. So some of them, these senior level people, are running local campaigns for individual candidates, which is great for the individual candidate. But, you know, it's like, wow, that person's working on that guy's campaign. That's pretty sweet for that person. But generally, it's like ridings like Yaletown, which could go anywhere. It could flip.
Right.
It's a new riding. It could go conservative. It could go NDP.
Especially, let's talk about your Yaletown riding, because that's where you live. We've talked about that before. I remember Linda mentioned it all the time on the show. That she lives down there. And I would say that Linda is conservative because her biggest issue and many people's biggest issue when living downtown, it's those safe injection sites, which Rustad is saying he is going to shut them all down and open up sites where if you come in to administer your drugs safely, you also go through the doors with the idea that you can have access to care that would see you give up a life where you needed daily doses of illicit street drugs, which, by the way, it should be pointed out that already exists.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm going to tear it down is a total spin on the data shows that lives are being saved. Six people are dying a day. Lives are being saved with safe injection sites. However, like the safe injection site that is in Yaletown, very poorly planned. Everybody could agree that it's like across the street from a park and basically a chop shop in front of it. It's not good for anybody.
It's more about safety that we care about Yaletown. Yeah. But we have two candidates. There is now a Green Party candidate. I have no idea who it is or what their name is. I just heard it yesterday that they've got somebody. But we've got two candidates, for the one for the NDP, one for the Conservative. They're both former NPA people. They worked with me in Vancouver on the party I was a part of. So now one of them, strangely, is running for the NDP, Terry Young, and the other is Melissa DeGenova, who's running for the Conservatives. NDP, my bet is that they thought, well, Terry is a former cop. That gives us some weight on, hey, we care about crime. We're running a cop in Yaletown, everybody. And Melissa, you know, there's clarity in her position on crime, and she's always been strong on that, and certainly it was aligned with me on these issues when I was on council, that, you know, we were being too loose on this kind of stuff. So, but I know everybody in Yaletown that I know is going, I don't like either of these parties. They don't want to vote NDP. Yale Town's kind of the ultimate centrist, I think, community. They're people, they don't want to be too hard on crime. Like they don't want to, they kind of accept living in a dense area with lots of social services. But they just think maybe it's gone too far. But then they think, I don't know, the conservatives, that guy, you know, all this stuff that we hear, you know, they, he's way too far. And I don't want to vote for the NDP. And so it's an opportunity for the Green Party if we knew the Green Party, what they stood for, which we don't.
Well, that's a problem.
Free train rides. I mean, what do they stand
for? Right. That's it. When I was writing down, you know, the Rustad, EB, First to Know. Or do we call her First to Know now? She changed the pronunciation of her last name, and I can now not remember which one she wants to be called. Sonia First to Know.
Let's go with that. I thought that was that. Yeah.
I think, it was First to Know, and then she changed it to First to Now, and now it's First to Know. So,
how about First to Not?
But I mean, I respect anybody who runs politically. It's a hard gig to put yourself in the crosshairs. Like when you talk about the number of people that should be going to campaign you and figuring it out. Like I told you this when I first met you, like, thank you for doing what you do because I couldn't do it. And so while I'm, you know, basically going to cast my opinions about each of these candidates, I need to say up front, they're doing something that I'm not doing. So thank you. But with Sonia First to Know, while I think she is smart and I think she is brave and I think she is on a mission to do what's best for the environment and to be a part of the Green Party. And Elizabeth May's autobiography is something that I think every Canadian should read because she's, you know, it's baked into her to want to try and save Mother Earth. But how they're going about it, it's not landing anywhere. Like, I'm just like, what are you? Who are you? Where, like, what's your policy? When I asked Pat McKetchum that, you know, what is the Green Party's policy on senior care? What's your plan? And he was like, we're going to take money out of big oil and we're going to put it into health. And I'm like,
They think money is just magic.
How does that work? Like,
I know. And you
think that's how it works.
Yeah. And the Green Party had an opportunity here to do what Gordon Wilson did with the BC Liberals back in 2002, which is kind of what Rustad's doing, but he's too far right to be believable for that centrist, those mushy middle people. Is that moment in that election, in that debate in 1992, when Gordon Wilson said, look, see, this is what I'm talking about. You got these crazy people and these crazy people. And what happened is that they destroyed the SOCREDs. Right. And when they became the official opposition, it's like, this is what happens if you do it right, if you have the right way of messaging. And that's all the Green Party need to do this election was go, you got these idiots and you got these idiots. Like, at least she would have probably got 10 seats if she'd done that and right. held the balance of power. Oh yeah. She would get, I think they could have got easily a couple of seats in Vancouver. Like if Pete Fry had run for the BC Green Party in Vancouver, I think he could have won. I think he could have won. He could win Yale Town if he was, for sure. People would vote for Pete Fry in Yale Town, 100%.
Yeah.
He's not even a centrist. Right. He would be, I would say, very far left. But
100%. Yeah.
His work on council has been seen as quite, you know,
moderate.
So he could use that. I don't know why he didn't go for it. He could have won, I think, in Yale Town.
I think in this moment, we started the show today talking about, you know, just how ugly it's going to get and the mudslinging is going to happen and all that. What I find interesting is people are so, generally speaking, people like not political pundits, but generally speaking, in the folks that I'm chatting with, people are exhausted by it all. And they're ready to say, okay, that party equals this, that party equals that. So if you're a part of that party, you must agree with all, like what we were talking about with the conservatives, right? Anti-vax, cutting safe injection sites, firing Dr. Bonnie Henry.
Homophobic. Throw that in there for the mix.
Like,
honestly, and that's what people say. I'm not saying that's what they are. But
no, but some are.
Perception.
Some are. But then there are, you know, a friend of mine, so full disclosure, this is somebody that I know personally, I've done work with. And then we have subsequently become friends over the years, and that's Yuri Fulmer. So he's a chancellor at Capilano University. He is an incredibly successful individual. He was 17 years old when he bought his first A&W franchise with his mom. And now he basically owns every A&W in Canada. I think he actually does own all of the A&Ws. He's the guy that came up with the idea to put fast food restaurants in gas stations to to be able to do a drive through when you stop it. Like,
and malls.
He's
right. Food fairs.
He started all of that. So this is a guy. He doesn't need money. He does not need it. But he lives in West Vancouver and he's like, you know what? I'm going to run. And I was like, wow, cool. And then I went, oh, wait. Who are you running?
Conservative.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? That's a lesson for me. You now are proving that if I paint every conservative with the same brush because I'm watching, you know, John Rustad, who has been, you know, anti-science. Yeah. Like, I'm like, John, like, dial it back. You already got those people. Talk to me because I'm scared of you because I have no port in this storm. Right. Because I am that mushy middle person. Like, I am going to vote on policy. When I get people like, oh, Jody NDP, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, really? But I mean, are you in the booth with me when I vote? Because I think I might surprise you. Because I've never been a one party person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not typical. Because mostly people are like, I always vote BC United, or I always vote whatever. I always vote NDP. But looking around right now, I can see why the mushy middle doesn't really feel like they have a port in the storm, because it has been put out there that it's either super far left or super far right.
Yeah.
Do people and stay at home, and does that work
this,
to the
that's
advantage?
Right. You can see how people, I always go, how do people, you know, not vote? And I'm thinking, actually, right now I'm yelling, I'm like, I don't know what to do.
I will definitely vote.
Yeah, no, of course I will vote, but it's definitely a dilemma in most, in some of these ridings where you're going, I don't know. Well, I don't know. But, you know, here's one thing though, you know, and there's two things that happened that this week with two parties. One is ABC, some data that was just read about them in Vancouver. And then,
we're going to municipal. We're going to municipal. Trudeau People follow us along.
Yeah.
Municipal first.
But I'm just in general though, spin and trying to turn your or when things go backwards or when you try to move things forward. Locally, ABC, nationally, Trudeau on Colbert, two different strategies. But first, we'll talk about ABC, I guess.
Let's go. Yeah, let's go municipal first, and then we'll go national, and then we'll go international.
For some reason in the summer, they decided to remove this integrity commissioner person that they put in place. It didn't exist before. I don't understand what the hell's going on with that and why they decided to try to push this thing forward. Now they flip-flop, say, oh, yeah, we need more talent. We heard from Vancouverites that this is a bad idea. You're like, yeah. Removing an integrity commissioner is pretty shady shit. I mean, you know, that's yelling, hey, we don't have integrity. We're going to remove this person. I mean, you shouldn't have put them in there in the first place. Any additional bureaucrats at City Hall, I don't care what they do. It's just always a bad idea. And okay, integrity commissioner, we've got the guy who's the auditor general, got $1 million, $2 million in budgets for those two people that they've added since they got in. But anyways, the other thing that we saw this morning, a poll came out saying 70% of people in Vancouver are unhappy with the APC. The party's only been in power for 2 years, and they're already at the bottom of the barrel of support. It's unbelievable. And they haven't even done anything bad, really. They've actually just given everything to everybody. They've done the exact opposite of what I wanted to, which I think, like, can you get the budget down? No, they've had the biggest budget increases. They've given everybody everything they want, spending like drunken sailors. They haven't cut anything. They on the other side, they're completely allowing all development to happen. So they've made everybody who hates development mad. They've made people like me mad because they're not looking at how they spend my money. And it's just like, so no wonder, you know, if you don't stand for anything in anywhere on the political spectrum or issue, you lose faith in the voter. You just like, well, what are you? Like, you don't stand, what do you stand for? And that is the issue. And so Green Party, ABC, what do you stand for? At least we know where the Conservatives stand, and we know kind of where the NDP stand. But where does ABC stand on finances? Where does ABC stand on, you know, they support it, they hate it, they want, yeah, it's just like,
we're flip-flopping between provincial and municipal, which I'm following along with, but there might be people watching the podcast right now going, what are you talking about? ABC,
well, no,
then NDP, then done. Yeah. Hold on, let me just clarify.
Yeah.
Because what I understand what you're saying there, and it does make a lot of sense, because most often, because there's only one voter, there's only one taxpayer. Mm-hmm. So we have to keep track of all of this crap. And an Unspun podcast is about trying to take the spin out of what we're seeing actually happen. And but absolutely not endorsing any parties here. Conversation is important about what we are seeing. And at the end of the day, in my opinion, and you know way more about politics than I do when it comes to the insider baseball, but what I'm seeing is an incumbent government at the provincial level in the NDP very much leaning into how much they've learned over the years of being in power, understanding that talking about their shortcomings when they're like, I'm going to fix housing like tomorrow, when people go, well, why didn't you fix it yesterday? They're like, well, because it was this and this and this in the way, and we're working on that and that and that in the way with the municipalities that we're doing. Like, they're able to explain their shortcomings. And they can also point to a pandemic, which feels like forever ago, but we're also still in the effects of, and we did get pulled through it. It was interesting watching Adrian Dick's body language at the debate that I was moderating, because it was almost like, he was like leaning on the podium and looking at the opponent, because he's like, really? I don't have time for this. You know, because he's done so much of this. That, but he also was able to spin it.
In enough time that you could actually have other speakers, because, you know, Adrian.
Well, I had a timer on all of them. I know. Oh, we had a yellow card for 30 seconds interview. And a red card. Oh, yeah.
For those of us who've interviewed Adrian Dix, oh, my God. Please, can you answer this question in less than 5 minutes?
So I held him to it during your question, and that was my job as the moderator, is to say, that's not the question. That's not the question. Inside the 2 minutes. So I was getting in the way of him ragging the puck around. So is that it's a yes or no? Is that a no? And he was like, that's a no. And an unpopular one too. And Eleanor Sturco, similarly, I'd ask her a question and she'd immediately pivot to going after Adrian Dix and David Eby, and she'd go down the, well, and the NDP. And I'm like, that's not the question. I asked you about your party.
Clarity.
What your platform is.
Clarity.
And she was like,
clarity.
I had this.
I had my spin. I had my spin.
So back to the Eby and the NDP. It feels very traditionally moving forward. So their attack ads are happening over here. So they don't need to attack. I'm just going to go through it real quick for our viewers, and then you can take it anywhere you like. So Eby, watching, you know, following along with Richard Zussman, who's on the campaign trail, or Rob Shaw on the campaign trail, and listening to what each party is putting out each day, very, very traditionally on point are the NDP. The Conservatives are like, there's no list of what the plan is for John Rustad, and he's going to be doing these things at 6 p.m. Everybody on any campaign knows that you don't do the event at 6 p.m. because the news is on at 6 p.m. You need to do the event here so you can get the stuff onto the news, so the people who actually vote, which are traditionally older people who watch the 6 o'clock news, get that information. So it's interesting to watch the difference in the savvy, is the word that comes to mind. And like you said, the Green Party should have learned from all of this and said, hey, we're your option that's not those guys. That could have just been what they run on and garnered some. So three very different strategies. That's what we're seeing provincially.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this, the change government and the stay the course. So NDP are straddling the stay the course and a little bit of change, which is smart because, you know, there's some data that came out this week, very good news for the NDP about the BC economy being one of the best in the country and the best turnaround and all these things. I'm surprised they're not actually pushing that more. Stay the course is kind of their messaging, but clarity is key. And so when I talk about ABC in Vancouver, I talk about the Green Party, I talk about the Conservatives. I mean, we talk about what was wrong with BC United. What did they stand for? We don't know. Clarity. Where is the clarity? When you do these debates, you moderate this. If there's no clarity, then you lose a voter. I thought it was interesting to bounce to a national, to Trudeau on Colbert, when you talk about spin and how do you turn things around? You know, can you turn things around? And that is a moment, I think, as a learning moment on how spin can work potentially and how you start to change the messaging. They managed to get him on, our prime minister, on Stephen Colbert, which is the real, I think, the number one. It is the number one night show, late show. And they're all declining, but and Canadians watch Colbert, and he is seen as, you know, left wing, probably, even though he used to have a show there where he pretended to be right wing. Anyways, very smart move because he came across
a parody show. Yes,
a parody show. Stephen Colbert was very like, why, you know, very anti Pierre Poilievre, clearly, and wondering why Canadians would want a Trump. Because Canadians really don't want a Trump. We don't necessarily see Poilievre as a Trump, but a lot of people do. But I don't think most Canadians are looking at Trump going, what the hell? What the hell, America? So, but, you know, we have this guy that is being positioned as kind of like Trump, and that's to the benefit of Trudeau. And so it was interesting to see the way the NDP are flip-flopping on issues to change the messaging, to get saying, stay the course. Okay, we've heard you. ABC saying they flipped on the commissioner thing because we heard you, but also what do they stand for? They're 70% on support right now at 2 years in, crazy numbers. And then you have Trudeau going, I got an election that's got to happen in 1 year. I got to turn this ship around. I'm not leaving. He said that over and over. And there doesn't seem, even though I've said I think he should, there's no momentum. There's no plan. There doesn't seem to be anybody he's nurturing.
I think Trudeau doesn't believe that the Bloc nor the NDP want to see an election called now because it does favor Poilievre so immensely in this moment, even as they threaten to, and the Bloc has threatened. I think it's in 2 weeks or a month's time that if there are two things that the Bloc want, and if the Liberals don't address it, they're gonna vote against the confidence agreement that still stands. So that threat has been put on the table, and now we're playing a game of chicken because those other parties, NDP and the Bloc, will not benefit from a possible majority Poilievre government.
And NDP need time to build their brand up, to be individual. We've talked about that before, where they need to, what do the NDP nationally stand for? We don't know. They've just been kowtowing to the BC federal Liberals so they can get what they want. That's, you know, dental care, I guess, is about the biggest one that they had. I mean, maybe there's other stuff, I don't know. But, you know, it's he has to build his brand. He needs time. So he separated himself. So now he's got 6 months, 8 months to build his brand. Trudeau has 6 to 8 months to build his brand to back up, which is the Colbert being step one. Get on a national U.S. show. Get people talking about me in a positive way again. Did work, 100% work. That YouTube video, you look at the views.
So tell people about that. Just take a moment here for somebody watching right now and going, I didn't watch Colbert. I haven't seen What did Trudeau do well on the Colbert?
He did two things in New York. He did the Stephen Colbert show. The other thing, there was a big traffic jam because of the Biden was in New York, and he walked. He walked to the UN. Just, hey, I'm the prime minister, but I'm walking down. And of course, his camera crew was there, surprisingly. And news team and all these other, it's strange. So he had two, and then he did Colbert, which he did a great job. I watched it, and three segments on Colbert. That's a lot of segments on a late night talk show. First out of the gate, got lobbed some good questions. He had Trudeau pulled off very charming, likable, did a very good job. Did a really good job.
I liked it when Stephen Colbert set him up to be, you know, we're friends, right? But if I don't know anything about Canada, how do you introduce yourself to me?
Yeah.
And the way Trudeau spoke about Canada was very, very good. And I enjoyed the fact, because obviously as a former drama teacher, this man knows performance. He has grown up in the public eye. He looked very relaxed and off the cuff, which is very difficult to do. I often say this to young aspiring journalists and broadcasters. Yeah. You're going to work for the next 10 years to try and get to a point where you look like you're not working when you're doing it, that you're looking effortlessly in the way, because it does take practice to be yourself in front of a camera, especially that kind of camera in front of the live studio audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater, knowing that all of America is going to see this. And he really pulled off what I, as a Canadian, while watching him, felt proud for him to say out loud. He was pitch perfect. He talked about us not being a melting pot, that in Canada, you bring your heritage to the country, and you don't try and assimilate yourself and change your language so you only speak the language like, and he did say, like becoming American. You become an American. In Canada, mm-hmm. we hold on to who we were, where we lived abroad, and we bring it to Canada. And
yeah, we
celebrated it. Yeah.
And by the way, these are actually words that his dad said 50 years ago.
Yeah, for sure. Oh
exact
my God.
Same words.
And it worked for him.
Yes.
It worked for him. Anyway, so I just thought that was worth, pointing out. And because I don't think I've ever seen in my lifetime someone as embattled in their role as right. Trudeau in this moment. And yes, I do remember and recall when Trudeau was elected over Stephen Harper, that, I mean, I have a stop sign outside of my house and a number of them down the street, and every single one of them had underneath the stop sign, they had been graffitied or defaced with Harper. So it was Stop Harper everywhere you went. Like it wasn't an elect Trudeau, it was a Stop Harper. And I feel in Canada right now, it's not so much an elect Poilievre, it's a no more Trudeau. And I find it interesting that so much of even the BC Conservatives and John Rustad are calling it a Trudeau NDP regime when he references David Eby. There's no such thing as a Trudeau NDP regime, guys. There's no such thing as that. That's a made up political spinny thing, right? Like, but to take the spin out of it, there's no regime. There's working together in government, and those sure. mushy middle types would like to see y'all stop just barbing constantly. Because what we're seeing in the U.S., we're watching it. Nothing.
To hold a minority government, to have a minority government successfully for 5 years is very unusual. They don't usually last that long. So he's done unusual. And he probably will, if he wins, it'll be another minority government. He's not going to take over Ontario or Quebec. And those are the two provinces. You need one or the other or both if you can. Nothing west of Ontario matters for any of the parties.
Ever.
It's really all about Ontario at the end. And what will Ontario do? And Doug Ford's going through an election there, and we'll see how that goes. But he's announcing crazy things about 55-kilometer tunnels. So, it's
underneath
crazy
the
times.
401, we're going to put a tunnel that takes some of the...
I love it. Bury those cars.
Hilarious.
They need more trains in Toronto. I'm always shocked when I go to Toronto how comparatively, like, they just got their subway 10 years ago to the airport. Like, what? Anyways.
Yeah, it's wild. But and also the 407, because I lived in Ontario for 10 years, and there's a highway that runs parallel to the 401 that's a toll highway, and the toll is significant. I mean,
yeah,
how about lessen the toll and get people moving on
put a
toll on both?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. But like a toll like the New Jersey Turnpike, dimes out the window, not yes. $3 each way or $23 each way. Nobody's on the 407. If you accidentally go in it, you're like, damn it. That was $20. Right?
I definitely
you get
do
there
not
in
drive
half the time.
In yeah. Toronto. I do not anyway. Drive, but I'm in Toronto. No, thank you. No, thank you. 12-lane highways. Yeah, that's the solution. I mean, it's ridiculous. You can't build enough highways to manage that kind of growth. It's ridiculous. You just
collector lanes.
Mass transit. Come on.
Learning how to drive in the collector lanes. Oh my God.
There you go.
I did a lot of highway driving in Ontario. Yeah, my sports net was way out in the boonies. So I had to like commute. Anyway,
it's always fun taking your kid on driving lessons onto the highways.
No. Okay, we gotta go. It's time. That's enough. We're done here. It's like Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which I just watched because I was under the weather last week. So I was like, I'm watching all the movies. So it's like, are you still here? It's over. Go home. So you can find us on social media, George_Affleck at George_Affleck. What a great follow you are on social media. You're on TikTok as well. Good times. Curb Communications. I am at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y, at Jody Vance on your social media. If you see the trolls coming for me, don't worry about me because I block them all. I block regularly and happily. My brother actually phoned me to say, is everything okay? I'm like, what do you mean? You know, this so-and-so with somebody's handles coming at you. A friend of mine saw it on your Twitter and he called me. So a guy on Twitter called my brother to ask if I was okay because of the trolls. I'm like, oh, I don't see any of them. Don't worry about me. So that's it. Keep watching. Tell your friends. And see you later.